So what if I told you that the greenest, like most eco-friendly thing you could possibly do for your backyard this weekend?
Is to pave it in plastic.
Yeah, exactly, to pave it in plastic.
It sounds completely ridiculous on its face,
Yeah,
really.
totally ridiculous.
But if you dig into the science, and especially if you happen to live anywhere with strict water restrictions, that counterintuitive statement might actually be the absolute truth.
Right, and that contradiction. That is the mission of today's deep dive. We're unpacking this highly comprehensive, frankly exhaustive guide to artificial grass installation that was put together by the team at Backyard Paradiso.
Yeah, we're looking at the hard data today.
Exactly. The goal is to help you figure out if ripping up a living ecosystem to lay down a synthetic one is, the ultimate homeowner life hack or just a really terrible idea.
Because let's be honest, we all know that uniquely suburban dread.
Oh, yeah. Saturday morning.
Right, Saturday morning, you're looking out your window with a cup of coffee, and you realize you have to spend the next 3 hours wrestling a lawnmower.
Edging the driveway, fighting the drought.
And trying to decipher why one specific patch of dirt absolutely refuses to grow grass, no matter what you do. Or, dealing with a dog who treats the yard like an active excavation site.
It is the defining homeowner's struggle. But the focus of this deep dive isn't just about avoiding yard work. We are really going to lean heavily into the massive aesthetic and environmental advantages of modern synthetic turf.
Because the technology has evolved so drastically. The plastic carpets of the past are completely irrelevant to what's being engineered today.
Yeah, which brings me to a question I want you, the listener, to actually think about for a second. Like, really think about it. How many hours of your life have you spent watering a patch of dirt that just refuses to turn green?
Too many. Way too many.
Right. But before we even get to the practical benefits, we really have to overcome the biggest mental hurdle here, which is the stigma of like 1970s AstroTurf.
Oh, the scratchy neon stuff.
Exactly. When someone says artificial turf, my brain instantly goes there. I picture this rigid, scratchy, neon green plastic mat.
That feels like a Brillo pad on your bare feet.
Yes. So
Yeah.
why do we even care about turf now? How does the industry justify putting that in a residential space?
Well, they wouldn't, right? Because those early products were designed strictly for high-impact sports fields. They weren't for backyards.
Yeah, okay. So what changed?
The polymer engineering finally crossed a critical threshold. The industry realized that the secret to realism isn't perfection. The secret to realism is actually deliberate
It's
imperfection.
deliberate imperfection. I mean, that makes sense conceptually, but how do they actually manufacture that?
So it starts at the molecular level. They switched the primary material from rigid nylon to polyethylene.
Polyethylene.
Yeah, which has a much lower glass transition temperature. That's just a fancy way of saying it remains highly flexible and soft at normal outdoor temperatures.
Oh, I see.
It physically mimics the flex and sway of a real blade of grass. Now, they might weave in a little nylon for structural resilience in high traffic areas or polypropylene for decorative borders, but polyethylene is the workhorse.
That.
And the real magic happens when they form the actual blades, because a natural lawn doesn't have perfectly identical blades of grass, right?
It's all over the place.
Exactly.
Okay.
So premium modern turf mixes flat blades, C-shaped blades, W-shaped blades, and narrow blades, all into the exact same square inch.
Wow, okay. Because if it's too uniform, our brains instantly flag it as fake. So it's
Precisely.
exactly like CGI in movies.
Right?
Like when CGI first started, faces looked like rubber because they were mathematically smooth.
Yeah, no pores, no asymmetric wrinkles.
Right, but now digital artists deliberately add a stray hair or a slight glint in the eye, and your brain accepts it as real. If it's done right, you don't even know you're looking at an illusion.
That is a phenomenal analogy. Turf engineers are essentially doing practical CGI for your backyard, and they apply that same philosophy to color, too.
Color.
Yeah, natural grass isn't one monotonous shade of Kelly green. The best products incorporate olive, emerald, and lime tones. And crucially, they also weave in curled tan, gold, and brown fibers closer to the base.
Wait, if I'm paying thousands of dollars for a perfect lawn, why would I want them to manufacture dead brown grass into it? That seems counterproductive.
It actually creates the thatch layer.
The thatch layer.
Yeah, in any biological lawn, there's always a layer of dead or dormant organic material resting just above the soil. By engineering a synthetic brown thatch layer, it props up the taller green blades and creates a visual depth that totally grounds the product in reality.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, without the brown thatch, it just looks like a cheap rug. With it, the eye is completely fooled.
Okay, looking at the Backyard Paradiso guide, they outline this whole tiered system. You've got the entry-level Eco series,
which is great for low-traffic decorative borders.
Right. Then the mid-range Imperial K91 and K92, mm-hmm. which are the durable workhorses.
Yep.
And then they scale all the way up to something called the Imperial Supreme.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to push back here because I am inherently skeptical of marketing terms like Supreme. Can that top tier actually fool the naked eye up close?
Yeah.
I mean, if I take my shoes off, does it still feel like I'm walking on a miniature golf course?
Okay, look, if you get down on your hands and knees and physically part the blades to look for dirt.
Which nobody does.
Right. But if you do, yes, you will eventually see the backing. But from a standing height or even sitting on a picnic blanket, products like the Imperial Supreme are virtually indistinguishable from a meticulously maintained biological lawn.
Really?
Oh, yeah. The density of those mixed-shaped polyethylene blades completely breaks the mini-golf illusion. It yields under your foot just like real soil and grass would.
All right. All right, let's say I buy into the aesthetic argument. It passes the eye test. We have to pivot to the environmental reality now.
Let's do it.
Because earlier, you claimed that rolling out a giant synthetic carpet could be an eco-friendly move.
I did.
And since we've established it looks real, the next logical question for you as a homeowner is that actually good for the environment?
It feels counterintuitive, I know. But when environmental analysts look at residential landscaping, the advantages of synthetic turf are surprisingly profound.
Okay, lay it on me.
It all starts with hydrology. Let's look at the raw data from the source material. A natural lawn in a hot, arid region requires roughly 50 to 75 gallons of water per square foot annually, just to avoid dying.
Wait, 50 to 75 gallons per square foot?
Annually, yes.
Let me just run the math on that.
Yeah.
If you have a relatively standard 1,000 square foot suburban backyard, you're talking about 50,000 to 75,000 gallons of water.
Every single year.
That is insane. Watering a natural lawn in a drought-prone state is basically like leaving your refrigerator door wide open while the AC is running. You're just dumping resources.
That is exactly what it is. It is a staggering volume of a rapidly depleting resource being poured into the ground, mostly for vanity.
Right.
When you switch to artificial grass, that water consumption drops to zero, aside from like an occasional light rinse. So in markets with severe water restrictions, synthetic turf isn't a luxury anymore. It's a necessary adaptation.
And water is only one variable, right? Because maintaining a pristine biological lawn is essentially running a localized chemical facility in your yard.
Oh, absolutely.
You have to apply synthetic nitrogen fertilizers, pre-emergent herbicides to kill crabgrass, pesticides to kill grubs.
And every time it rains, a percentage of those chemicals washes off your lawn, goes down the street gutter, and directly into the local watershed.
Exactly. Turf completely eliminates that toxic cycle of lawn care.
Zero fertilizers, zero pesticides, zero herbicide runoff, and as a secondary benefit, zero emissions from gas-powered mowers.
Okay, I hear the benefits. I really do. But I have to ask, considering the massive water savings and the lack of chemical runoff, does the, 20-year operational life of turf genuinely outweigh the fact that it eventually ends up in a landfill?
Yeah, that is the most valid limitation to point out.
Because we're talking about saving water. But a million gallons of saved water doesn't magically negate a literal ton of unrecyclable plastic sitting in a landfill.
You're right, and it's critical to look at this objectively. At the end of its 15 to 20 year life, the disposal method for most residential turf is currently the landfill.
Right.
However, the environmental consensus generally views the trade-off as acceptable for one specific reason.
Which is?
The plastic is inert.
Meaning it doesn't break down and leach chemicals into the groundwater like a single-use plastic bag might?
Correct. It just sits dormant. So when environmental scientists weigh the immediate compounding daily damage of depleting drinking water and polluting rivers with runoff over two decades against burying a stable, inert layer of plastic at the end of its life, the eco-calculus heavily favors the synthetic option in water-scarce regions.
Okay, that's it.
Plus, to maintain balance here, the industry is currently pouring funding into specialized recycling plants to solve this exact end-of-life problem.
So the scale tips toward the turf, especially if you live somewhere where water is at a premium.
Absolutely.
That makes sense. Okay, let's move from the theoretical environmental debate to the brutal reality of a Tuesday afternoon with a golden retriever and a toddler.
Ah, yes. Real life.
Because knowing it saves water and looks pristine is great, but how does it survive the chaos of real life? A single large dog can completely destroy a natural lawn in one season.
Oh, yeah. The repeated digging, the pacing along the exact same path by the fence.
And the nitrogen in their urine.
Right, which chemically burns those brown spots into the grass. Natural grass just cannot regenerate under that kind of targeted stress.
Right, I've seen backyards that look like an active archaeological excavation site just because of one very happy Labrador. So how does synthetic turf handle a dog treating the yard like a bathroom in a racetrack?
By using specialized systems, the guide points to products like the Imperial PRO, which are engineered specifically for pet households.
Okay, how are they different?
They use a shorter pile height, so solid waste doesn't get tangled deep in the fibers. And more importantly, the backing of pet turf is heavily perforated.
For a drain.
Exactly. It drains liquids at an incredibly high flow rate, moving urine through the surface much faster than a torrential rainstorm could even produce.
Wait, I have to stop you there, because we need to talk about the smell.
Okay.
If my dog uses this synthetic lawn as a bathroom every single day for 5 years, isn't the turf just acting as a giant synthetic sponge for pet waste?
That's the assumption, yeah.
Right, because plastic notoriously holds on to odors.
Right.
How does a quick rinse from a hose actually solve 5 years of pet waste?
It's a fantastic question, and the answer isn't in the plastic grass itself. It's actually in the infill.
The infill?
Yeah, when professionals install turf, they don't just lay it flat. They use a heavy granular material that they aggressively brush down into the fibers to weigh the turf down.
Oh, I see.
For a standard installation, they use silica sand, but for a pet installation, they use a highly specialized infill called zeolite.
Zeolite. Okay, what is that?
Zeolite is a naturally occurring volcanic mineral. It has a deeply fascinating molecular structure. It actually looks like a microscopic honeycomb, and it acts as an active ion exchanger. So when dog urine hits the zeolite, the mineral physically traps the ammonia compounds.
Which are the source of the smell.
Exactly. It locks those ammonia molecules inside its honeycomb structure until it rains or until you spray it with a hose.
So the water just washes the smell away.
Better than that. The water forces the sodium ions inherently present in the zeolite to literally swap places with trapped ammonia ions.
Wow, really?
Yeah. It actively flushes the ammonia deep into the earth below the base layer, totally neutralizing the odor on the surface. Add in antimicrobial coatings on the blades, and the smell issue is practically eliminated.
So it's not a plastic sponge at all. It's an active, mineral-based, amicable filtration system.
Exactly.
That completely changes how I view the product. Okay, what about playgrounds? You mentioned toddlers. Is this stuff safe to put underneath, say, a 12-foot swing set?
It is demonstrably safer than biological grass, provided it's installed with the right underlayment. For play areas, installers lay down specialized shock-absorbing foam pads beneath the turf. And they actually evaluate this using a strict safety test called the ASTM F1292 standard.
Let's translate that for the listener.
Yeah.
What does an ASTM F1292 test actually measure in the real world?
Simply put, if a child falls off a slide, how much kinetic energy is absorbed by the ground versus how much is reflected back into the child's knee or skull?
Got it.
Dirt and compacted natural grass are hard surfaces. They absorb very little energy, but the foam underlayment beneath synthetic turf is engineered to dissipate that energy laterally.
So it dramatically reduces the risk of serious impact injuries.
Exactly. And you completely eliminate those muddy trenches that inevitably form under swings.
So if they can engineer this system to drain dog waste, chemically filter ammonia, and absorb the G-force of a falling toddler, can they engineer the physical shape of the ground itself?
What do you mean?
Like putting greens. Can I actually practice my short game on this, or is the turf way too thick?
Oh, you couldn't put on the Imperial Supreme. No, the ball would just sink. But installers use a totally different product for that, like Putting Green Max.
Putting Green Max, sir?
Yeah, it features an incredibly short, dense pile designed to mimic the friction of bent grass on a professional golf course. So you get a true ball roll.
And I understand they sculpt the ground underneath.
Exactly. The real craftsmanship happens underneath. Installers actually sculpt the aggregate base to create permanent, realistic contours and breaks.
Which brings us to the most critical, yet completely invisible part of this entire conversation.
The hidden engineering.
Exactly. Because if the surface is tough enough to handle a Labrador, a swing set, and a golf ball, What is actually keeping this whole synthetic system from turning into a flooded swamp during a rainstorm?
Well, the biggest secret of the artificial grass industry is that the grass itself is only half the product.
It's half.
Yeah. The longevity, the drainage, the overall performance of your turf is entirely dictated by the base layer beneath it.
Right. I compare it to the foundation of a house, you know. Nobody sees it, but if you cheap out with a DIY job, the whole thing collapses into a mess.
That is spot on. Before any turf is unrolled, a professional crew will excavate inches of your natural topsoil and replace it with a deep, compacted bed of crushed rock or decomposed granite.
Because if you just buy a roll of fake grass and unroll it over your existing dirt, it's like putting a coffee filter over a brick.
Yes.
The water hits the turf, but it has nowhere to go because the dirt underneath is totally impermeable.
Right. Dirt turns to mud because the soil particles suspend in the water and create a barrier. But a professionally compacted, crushed stone base acts like a French press.
The French press.
Yeah, the angular rocks lock together to create a rigid surface, but they leave millions of microscopic air gaps, void space between the stones.
That's when it rains.
The water pulls straight through the permeable turf backing and falls rapidly through those voids deep into the water table. A well-installed system actually drains faster and handles heavy rain better than most natural lawns.
But there has to be a physical limitation to this material, right?
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about the summer sun, because it is, at its core, a plastic product. Does it turn your yard into a heat trap?
Heat retention is undeniably the biggest physical limitation, yes. Polyethylene absorbs and holds solar radiation.
Okay, so how hot does it get?
On a 90-degree summer afternoon in direct sunlight, the surface temperature of synthetic grass can climb 30 to 50 degrees Fahrenheit hotter than the surrounding air.
Wait, 50 degrees hotter? So it could reach, like, 140 degrees?
Easily.
That's stepping on hot asphalt territory. You couldn't let a dog or a baby crawl on that.
You absolutely could not, which is why landscape design is critical. Installers manage this by strategically placing turf around shade structures, you know, like pergolas or mature trees.
Right.
They also use lighter colored infills that don't absorb as much heat. But the easiest mitigation is just water. Because the drainage is so incredibly efficient, you can simply spray the turf with a hose for 60 seconds.
Oh, and the evaporative cooling kicks in.
Exactly. It drops the surface temperature back to a comfortable level almost immediately. But speaking of the sun, you have to be very careful with modern architecture, specifically your windows.
My windows? What do my house's energy-efficient windows have to do with my plastic grass?
It is the most bizarre hazard in the industry. Many modern energy-efficient homes are built with low-E or low-emissivity windows.
All right, to keep the AC bill down.
Exactly. They have a microscopic coating to reflect solar heat away from the house. But if the sun hits slightly concave low-E glass at the perfect angle, the window acts exactly like a magnifying glass.
Are you telling me my house's energy-efficient windows can essentially weaponize the sun and melt my new lawn?
That is exactly what happens.
No way.
Yes. It concentrates a highly intense beam of solar energy directly onto the ground. And that concentrated beam gets so hot that it exceeds the melting point of polyethylene.
Oh my God.
It will literally melt the synthetic fibers, leaving a scorched, permanently disfigured streak across your pristine lawn.
That is unbelievable. Sorry, I can't come to work today. My house laser beamed my front yard.
I mean, it is a genuine issue. Professional installers actually have to perform sun angle mapping during the design phase to anticipate where those reflections will hit.
Fine.
Yeah, and they'll recommend external window films or shade sails to diffuse the light before it hits the grass.
Okay, so we've covered the molecular engineering, the massive water savings, the zeolite chemical filtration, and the danger of rogue laser beam windows.
We have.
Bringing this all down to earth, what is the bottom line for the listener's wallet and their time?
Well, the upfront capital investment is significant.
Give me the numbers.
Depending on your region, the cost of excavation and the product quality, entry-level installations start around $8 to $12 per square foot.
Okay.
If you move into the mid-range or premium imperial lines, you are looking at $0.50 to $22 per square foot. And custom sculpted putting greens can easily exceed $20 to $30 per square foot.
That is a serious hit to the wallet up front. But how does the true ROI calculate out over time? Since the lifespan is, what, 15 to 20 years?
Exactly, 15 to 20 years. So you have to view it over a 10-year horizon.
Right.
When you deduct the cost of your monthly irrigation water, the ongoing cost of fertilizers, weed killers, gas for a mower,
and paying a landscaping crew every week.
Right. The total cost of ownership over a decade usually reaches parity with, or falls below the cost of maintaining a biological lawn.
And the unquantifiable metric is that you get your time back. You recover dozens of hours every single year that you used to spend sweating behind a lawnmower on a Saturday morning.
Exactly. The daily return on investment is simply peace of mind. The yard always looks perfect, and you never have to work for it.
As we wrap up this deep dive, I want to look past the suburban backyard for a second, because this technology seems like it has applications far beyond just replacing a struggling lawn in the suburbs.
It absolutely does. The Backyard Paradiso Guide highlights that synthetic turf is increasingly utilized for rooftop terraces and dense, shaded urban lots.
Oh, like in cities.
Yeah, they specifically mention places like Secaucus, New Jersey. In these dense urban environments, biological grass simply cannot survive.
Because of the lack of direct sunlight and shallow soil.
Right, and the constant foot traffic. And if we connect this engineering to the broader architectural picture, it leaves us with an incredibly fascinating question for the future of our cities.
What kind of question?
Well, think about it. If modern artificial turf allows us to place lush, green, perfectly draining, heat-mitigated spaces on top of high-rise roofs or concrete apartment balconies, or shaded urban alleyways where biology completely fails?
Right.
Could the future of our urban centers be covered entirely in synthetic green ecosystems?
Wow.
Imagine gray skyscrapers terraced with evergreen synthetic parks, fundamentally changing our psychological and visual relationship with the concrete jungle. We might not just be replacing our suburban lawns, we might be reskinning our cities entirely.
Reskinning our cities. Next time you're stuck in a gray concrete downtown grid, just imagine it blanketed in a perfect, drought-proof, zeolite-filtered shade of imperial supreme green.
It's a completely different world.
It really is. It might completely change the way you view a plastic lawn. Definitely something to think about next time you're staring down that lawnmower.